This is the fifth and final tape in the set on the upper level technical data of TROM, and like its predecessors, it mustn't be separated from the other members of the set. The title of the lecture is Postulates, Self, and the Obsessive IP. One of the most puzzling aspects of the IP to the beginner is the fact that the being does not perceive the IP in its exact form. The being perceives the IP as mass and not as a postulate configuration. Actually, this isn't as unusual as it sounds at first glance, because we must remember that the IP is embedded in an area of confusion. We know that when a person goes through the IP state in games play, as they go into the IP, they go into confusion, and they go into the IP, and as they come out the other side of the IP, again, they go through this state of confusion. And it's well known, Ron Hubbard has documented this on many occasions, that a being, a spiritual being, tends to see a confusion of particles, a confusion as a mass, rather than as what it actually consists of. In other words, instead of seeing a collection of randomly moving particles, the being will perceive it as a mass, and this is generally true. So it's no real surprise that the spiritual being tends to view the IP, well, not tends to, but does view the IP as a mass and not as a postulate configuration. And when we also add to this the known fact that the rational mind abhors the IP condition and simply almost flatly refuses to experience it. So the combination of those two things, that the being tends to view a confusion as a mass, and we add that to the fact that the rational mind abhors insanity and abhors the IP state, it is indeed no surprise at all that the IP state, the IP barrier, is seen by the spiritual being, is perceived by the spiritual being as a mass. Now we must ask ourselves, just what does the spiritual being associate this mass with? Well, he clearly doesn't associate it with the IP state, because he's unwilling to experience. So what does he associate the IP state with? Well, we know there's two IPs in the set, don't we? Let's consider the XY set, and let's consider a being that is occupying the X postulate. That's his game postulate, and that postulate is in the class of self. And his opposition postulate is 1 minus Y, and there is the barrier between them, and he looks across and sees the barrier there as a mass. Now, what does he associate, in terms of IPs, or in terms of sensation, what does he associate this sensation with, in terms of the postulates, or as close as he can get to the IP state? What would he associate this barrier with? What would he associate this sensation that he sensed with? What would he, in terms of postulates? Well, now, this isn't as difficult a question to answer as we might believe at first glance. In fact, it's an extremely easy question to answer. Let us first of all consider what happens when the person with the X postulate wins the game? What does he associate with winning the game? Well, when he wins the game, he notices that the opponent is driven into the class of Y. And he not only notices, if he's perceptive, that the opponent is driven into the class of Y, but he notices that the opponent seems to go through this mass, this barrier, which we call the IP barrier, and tends to experience the postulates. It goes through a confusion of postulates and then ends up in the postulate Y. So when the games player in X, when he wins his game, he sees 1 minus Y go through a period of confusion, a postulate confusion, and then end up in the overwhelm of Y. And this he associates with winning the game. Now, the thing he associates with losing his game is himself being driven through a period of confusion and ending up in the postulate of 1 minus X, being driven into 1 minus X. So it's no real surprise to discover that the situation that the being associates with winning his game is the IP over the other side of the barrier. In other words, the person in the X, playing with the X postulate, associates game sensation with the Y, 1 minus Y, IP, because that is the one that's associated with his winning of the game, you see. So that to him is game sensation. Every time he wins his game, the opponent gets driven through that IP. See that? So that's the one he associates game sensation with. The reason for the association is that he, by using his X postulate, his game postulate, he generates this sensation and he sees it in terms of the game loss over that way. And he sees the other person going through from 1 minus Y into Y. So he associates that IP with his X game. And he does not associate his own game loss with the game sensation. Now, this reasoning is quite general. To put it another way, this coming from another angle, the IP on his side of the barrier is the X, 1 minus X IP, isn't it? That is the one, if he loses the game, that's the one he's going to go through. The IP on the other side of the barrier, that i.e. the IP in the class of not self, is the Y, 1 minus Y IP. So he will associate the game sensation in the game with the Y, 1 minus Y, IP. And he doesn't associate the game sensation with the X, 1 minus X, IP. In fact, he won't register that as sensation at all. The only one he registers as sensation would be the IP in the class of not self. Now, this rule is absolutely general. It's so general that you can define in the goals package, you can define which postulate the being is operating on by the IP that he regards as game sensation. You can determine which postulate he's operating on. or at least, when I say which postulate or its negative is operating on. In other words, if he's operating on x or 1 minus x, then the IP that he considers to be sensation will be the y, 1 minus y IP. And if he's operating on y or 1 minus y, then the IP that he regards as sensation will be the x, 1 minus x IP. Now, this leads us to the general law of game sensation in the goals package, the general law of game sensation. And this law states that the IP that the games player regards as game sensation is the IP that is within the class of not self. Now, on a previous lecture, I've already pointed out how the games player, as his play becomes more and more obsessive, he becomes more and more obsessed with the generation of game sensation. So we find that as games play becomes more and more compulsive, that the player becomes more and more obsessed with the sensation, and becomes more and more obsessed with the generation of this particular IP. This is what we predict, and this is what we actually find does happen in games play. This is so much so, it's so marked, that we call this IP the obsessive IP. So, of the two IPs in the goals package, the one in the class of self is not registered as an IP at all. It's got nothing to do with sensation as far as the games player is concerned. It doesn't generate any game sensation for him. And it's simply associated, if he associates it with anything, it's associated with game loss. But the one where his attention is fixated, and the one which is very important to him, and the one which we call the obsessive IP, is over there in the class of not-self. And it's very easy to isolate this IP. You've only got to know what the games player's game postulate is. Once you know this game postulate, you know what the obsessive IP is, because the obsessive IP is the IP that doesn't contain his game postulate. Get it? That isolates it immediately. You see, there's only two IPs in the set, and the obsessive one is the one that doesn't contain his game postulate. Equally, of course, if we knew that this particular games player was obsessed with a particular IP in a particular goals package, we would be able, by simply looking at the IP he's obsessed with, we would know which side of the goals package he is on. We could determine that it's either a postulate or it's negative. We would know which side of the game he is on, which postulate he regards in the class of self. So it's a two-way proposition, and we would never be let down. There's no exceptions to the rule. The rule, as I say, is a completely general rule. Now let's give some examples of this rule, and it might seem a little bit long-winded the way I've approached it and so forth, but I've approached it in this manner because I want you to really grasp it and understand it. It's not an easy one to grasp, and because it can seem a little strange at first glance. You might say to yourself, well, surely the IP on his side of the barrier, the one which he is in the class of self, would be the one that would be much more real to him, much more important to him in games play. But that is not the way it is. The one that the person regards as important, and the one that he regards and associates, and the only one he associates with the generation of game sensation, is the one in the class of not self. That's a general, it's a general law. If you understand that, you can understand a tremendous amount about life and livingness and sensation, and gives you an enormous predictability on games play and goals packages and so forth in everyday life, as you'll begin to understand before we get to the end of this lecture. Now let's take a very, very simple example. Let's take the tweet goals package. Now the tweet goals package is one of the more interesting goals packages. I haven't said very much about it so far in the supplementary lectures. In fact, it's hardly mentioned in the write-up. It's one of the bodily goals packages, one of the two bodily goals packages. And it's a very, very easy one to erase for the average person. Unless they're into such things as starving themselves to death or overeating, unless they've got some very heavy compulsions and inhibitions on the subject of eating, the goals package will erase quite comfortably. Just in passing, I better give you some data I have on the to eat goals package, because it won't appear anywhere else. You would think offhand that there would be a double bind in that goals package. The games play would be completely and utterly compulsive in the tweet goals package, like it is in the to sex goals package. But that is not so. That is not so. Or put it another way, the human body does have a very tiny tolerance of being eaten. See, if games play was completely compulsive, and it would have got itself down to a one games class set, the goals package was down to a single games class, the body would be in the class of to eat and to not be eaten, wouldn't it? That would be the final remaining class, games class, in the goals package. But the body can get into the other games class. It can just get into it. That is the class of to be eaten and to not eat. It doesn't like being in it, in that class, but it can just get into it. What makes me so sure that the body can just get into it is, and the fact that the body doesn't like being in that class, is the enormous reaction that the human body does have to being eaten. You get this little tiny insect like a mosquito comes along and sticks his proboscis into your arm and takes a microscopic amount of blood away from you as its dinner, and flies away, and your arm produces quite an enormous bump. You get a similar thing with a gnat bite or an ant bite. In other words, the body's reaction to such a tiny nibble from such a tiny insect is quite unproportional to the amount of damage that's being done to the body. So one can conclude from this that the human body has a very, very great intolerance to being eaten. It simply doesn't like being eaten at all. It reacts violently to other organisms that want to take a nibble out of it. But nevertheless, it can be eaten. It does have some tolerance of being eaten, even if the tolerance is only very, very slight. It's a fascinating goals package. As you raise the tweet goals package, you would learn all sorts of things about this subject of eating. Amongst animals, the big game amongst animals, of course, is to eat. You think, well, it will be the same amongst plants. But no, it's not. Amongst plants, the big game in the to eat goals package is not to eat amongst plants. Plants, many, for millions of years, have polished up all their possibilities on the subject of eating. You know, they've perfected their root system and their system of photosynthesis, of getting converting the carbon dioxide in the air and the sunlight, and combining the two together to produce their their chemistry. And that's all been set for a long, long while ago. So the postulate to eat in the plant is they've pretty well got to the limit. You know, the plant, all plants that are running around today, or not running around, but all plants today have pretty well got to the limit on that. Now, the big game amongst plants is to not be eaten. That is the big game. And if plants are evolving at all, they're evolving more and more in that direction of to not be eaten. In other words, they haven't reached their limits yet. They're still exploring the possibilities there. We humans ought to be very grateful to this plant, the plant kingdom's subject of not wanting to be eaten, because the plants produce all sorts of very interesting drugs that we use in medicine. The vast majority of these drugs are simply in the plant to prevent the plant being eaten. You know, you take the marijuana plant, which has got in its leaves and stems, has got the drug cannabis. Well, and cannabis, of course, as anyone who tried it, is a bit of a mind-bending drug. And it's quite clearly the purpose of this drug is to deter animals from eating it. You know, you get this little zebra, and he comes along and takes a nibble at this this cannabis plant. And the cannabis blows its mind, and the zebra goes whoopee, gets a high, and goes off and tries to mate with a lion. And that's the last is heard of the zebra, you see. So that plant is not going to be eaten by that zebra again. You get the idea? That's just, you know, gives you one example there. Sometimes the chemicals used in the plant are quite lethal to animals. You know, they can be extremely poisonous. In fact, some of the most violent and most deadly poisons known to mankind are plant poisons. The only other really deadly ones that are known to mankind are the animal venoms of the spiders and the snakes. But the plant kingdom has got its own set of rather nasty venoms it has. And you know, as every person who goes into the woods and picks what he thinks are mushrooms and takes them home for the evening meal is likely to find out that not everything that looks like a mushroom is edible. Some of these little plants contain some rather nasty venoms. And the reason all these chemicals are in the plant is to prevent the plant being eaten by animals. So that the game of the plant is it's big business amongst plants not being eaten, and the plants are always doing a lot of work on this subject of improving their possibilities of not being eaten. So the big game amongst plants is to not be eaten, but the big game amongst animals is to eat. You see, it's a slightly different stress between the animal kingdom and the plant kingdom. Now, when a person operating on the to eat postulate, the obsessive IP would be the to be eaten, to not be eaten, or to, in terms of enforcement, the must be eaten, mustn't be eaten IP. That would be the obsessive IP that we would predict, and that is the one that we do find. If you examine that IP in therapy, get the idea, get close to that IP, you find yourself rapidly into the subject of digestion, and the whole subject of, you're right at the very core of this whole subject of eating, you are, as far as the human being's concerned. And his whole idea of whether he can digest this food and whether he can actually survive it and whether he can eat it, and the whole thing is that his whole fixation as a being in terms of eating is on this subject of to be eaten, to not be eaten, you know, the IP. That must be eaten IP is what he regards as the sensation of eating. If you want to know what the sensation of eating is, well, it's the IP, must be eaten, mustn't be eaten. That is, that IP is the sensation of eating. Mm-hmm. If you don't believe this is so, if you don't believe what I say is so, you should simply get the idea of must be eaten, and must be eaten, mustn't be eaten, must be eaten, mustn't be eaten. Get the idea of the IP there, and you'll find that it will produce quite some queasy sensations in your tummy. Whereas the IP, must eat, mustn't eat, doesn't affect the body in the slightest. So I can tell you which one is the one that the body is obsessed with. The body is obsessed with the must be eaten, mustn't be eaten IP, which is what the one we would predict, because the body is obsessed with eating and not being eaten. That is the that's its obsession. But its gain postulate is to eat. That's for sure. That's the body's gain postulate, is to eat. And that, of course, though, we would predict that the obsessive IP would be the must be eaten, mustn't be eaten IP, and that is the one that is the obsessive IP when we come to test this experimentally with a human body. So simply on the subject of eating, we see evidence straight away. By the way, any queasy effect playing with the IPs of the to eat goals package can be easily resolved by simply raising the to eat goals package. So I wouldn't recommend that you play with the IPs of the to eat goals package until you've erased the to eat goals package in therapy. I wouldn't recommend it, otherwise you can give yourself quite a queasy tummy. Once the to eat goals package is erased, of course, out of your psyche, it won't matter what you play with on the subject of the to eat goals package, it won't adversely affect your body. Now I'd like to give you another example. We'll take up the example already mentioned of the adolescent lads driving their car at 60 miles an hour towards a brick wall to get the thrill, so-called, of seeing how close they can get to the wall when they pull up. Now, what is the postulate structure? What's the postulates here, and what are the IPs here? Well, the actual postulate here is to kill, and the thing on the receiving end of their postulate, of course, is their body. So that their game postulate is to kill. So the IP here is the must be killed, mustn't be killed IP. Now the game is to drive the car, and therefore their body, which is in the car, as close as possible to that IP. Clearly, if they hit the wall at speed, the body will go through the IP, will go through the wall as well, probably. We'll go through the IP, mustn't be killed, must be killed, and go into the overwhelm of must be killed. They will succeed in killing their body. They will win their game. You see that? But the game sensation, as far as the adolescents are concerned, is that IP, must be killed, mustn't be killed. And they're seeing how close they can get to that IP, how close they can drive their body to that IP without killing their body. And they're doing, the purpose of the game is to pick up the sensation from the must be killed, mustn't be killed IP. And as you understand that game in terms, we see that game, you understand it in terms of the IPs, the winning the game, the losing the game, the IPs, the postulates. It's a nice little example of what we would predict and what we see in practice. Once you understand the IPs and the game postulates and the IPs, the class of self, the class of not self, you can take a little example like the adolescent boys in their car, driving their car at 60 miles an hour towards the wall, and suddenly the whole thing makes enormous sense, doesn't it? Now, before I explained it, you see, it didn't make all that much sense, the idea of a gang of lads getting into a car and driving it at 60 miles an hour towards a wall in order to experience a thrill. It was a bit tricky to understand this in terms of postulates. But once we got the IPs, we know what the sensation consists of exactly. We can put the whole thing together. And now we understand the whole situation. We understand it much more than the adolescent boys ever understand it. However, it's not until we take up the subject of the to sex goals package that this subject of self postulates and the obsessive IP really starts to become valuable to us, really starts to become valuable. When I discussed the subject of the to sex goals package on one of the earlier supplementary tapes, if you recall, I said that that the male becomes obsessed with depriving the female of her mustn't be sexed postulate and driving her from mustn't be sexed into must be sexed. Do you recall that material? Well, that was really just a sort of a way of saying, without explaining it, without mentioning the IPs, the truth of the matter is that the male, as he operates on a to sex postulate, his obsessive IP is the must be sexed, mustn't be sexed IP. So what really obsesses him is depriving the female of her mustn't be sexed postulate, driving her through the mustn't be sexed, must be sexed IP into must be sexed. And it is that situation that brings about the male orgasm, the male sexual orgasm. Now, similarly for the female, she operating on her must be sex postulate is obsessed with depriving the male of his mustn't sex postulate and driving the male through from mustn't sex through the must sex IP into must sex. And that is her, the female, orgasmic situation. So, in the to sex goals package, never miss it, to the male, sexual sensation is the must be sexed, mustn't be sexed IP. And to the female, sexual sensation is the must sex, mustn't sex IP. Now, this state of affairs is tremendously valuable to us on the subject of sexuality because it allows us to determine with invariable accuracy, and I stress the word invariable accuracy, we can determine whether a being is in the male or the female universe when discussing this person's sexual quirks. Now, this is something that Sigmund Freud he would have given his back teeth for this piece of information, to be able to do this. And it's something that's been puzzling sexual therapists all the way down the line, you know. There's more sexual quirks per square inch of humanity than there are quirks on any other subject under the sun, you know. And people do get very, very worried about their sexual quirks. And what worries them about their sexual quirks is that they don't know whether they're in the male universe or the female universe. This is what basically bothers them. I remember I had a pericleia in London there, back in the days when we were running engrams, and this chappy, he had a sexual quirk, and his sexual quirk was that it used to give him a sexual thrill if a girl was wearing Wellington boots, rubber Wellington boots. Used to turn him on sexually, you see. He would get an erection and so forth. And he was always pestering his girlfriends to wear rubber Wellington boots, you see. And now this was a harmless enough little sexual quirk, but the unfortunate thing about it was that if he wore rubber Wellington boots, he would also get sexually aroused. And his problem was, as he expressed it to me, he didn't know whether he was being masculine or feminine. He wanted to know whether he was... Well, he feared that he may be homosexual. Because the... You see, he was sexually aroused when the girl was in the Wellington boots. But if he wore the Wellington boots, he was sexually aroused too. He would get an erection again, you see. So he just wondered... began to wonder about his masculinity. He wondered whether he was a male or whether he was a female. Well, now, unfortunately, in those days, we were running engrams, and there wasn't too much I could bring to bear on this subject. We cleaned up his prenatal bank, I remember that, and we found out that it was what you might call a continuing problem, that his dad apparently had the same fixation upon Wellington boots, and that had got into the prenatal coitus engrams, and the thing had got passed on to his son via childhood and so forth. It was a rather complicated story, but nevertheless it was one of these continuing aberrations, you might say, or continuing quirks that were being passed down the male line from father to son. God knows how many generations have been passed down, but nevertheless he'd certainly got this quirk, and as far as we knew, that he'd inherited it from his dad. I was able to take a lot of tension off the situation for him, and he certainly was nowhere near as bothered about it as when he left me as when he arrived. But I won't go so far as to say that I erased the whole of the thing. I couldn't have done, because I didn't know anything about the sex goals package. I didn't know anything about sexual sensation. Given that same PC today, with what I know, it would have been very, very easy to resolve the whole thing. But nevertheless, he was very happy, and he went on his way and thanked me very much for what I'd done for him. But nevertheless, there was an example of a sexual quirk there that was bothering the person. Okay, well, let's examine that sexual quirk now and find out, we can determine with great accuracy which universe this person was in. Was he in the male universe, or was he in the female universe? Well, he was very sure of one thing, very sure of the fact that the girls in Wellington boots, when girls wear Wellington boots, it made them more amenable to sex. That was what was in his mind. That was the basis of the quirk, was that he had this idea, this fixed idea, that if a girl wore Wellington boots, it made her more sexy, and she was more in favour of going to bed with him. At least that was what, in other words, it made the girl more amenable to sex. Well, now once you know that, well, we now know that the quirk there, the thing that was, because the thing that was exciting him was actually this subject of the IP, must sex, mustn't be sexed. You see that? Because it was the fixation was upon the female being more amenable to being sexed. You see that? Being more amenable to sex. So clearly that was the IP that he was, that was the obsessive IP. He was obviously in the mass sex postulate, and the female was clearly in over the other side of the fence. So he was clearly in the male universe. It fixed it right away. We fixed him, fixed it right away. Remember, as I said earlier on in this lecture, that if you know the obsessive IP, you can determine the postulates that the person, the game postulate that the person is operating on. You can determine which side of the Gulch package they are once you know the obsessive IP. If you know which side of the Gulch package they are, you know what their obsessive IP is. You see that? So knowing that the that he regarded that wearing Wellington boots made girls more amenable to be sexed, fixed him right away, put that into the class of not self, so he must be on the other side of the package, over on the to sex side of the package, which is the male side of the package. So you see it? Straight away it solved that problem. But what, you might ask, about him himself being sexually aroused when he wore Wellington boots himself? How come? Well, surely that was an example of him being out of gender. No, he's still in gender. Because look, it's still the person wearing the Wellington boots is more amenable to be sexed, and that is what's turning him on. So he's still in the male gender, even though it's his own body. Do you get it? It doesn't matter. The rule is that it's the IP. It's the obsessive IP. It doesn't matter if the obsessive IP is associated with his own body or someone else's body or where it is. If he's turned on by that IP, and that IP means sensation to him, and that IP is must be sexed, the must be sexed, mustn't be sexed IP, then he is a male. Now, how do you get that? It fixes it. It fixes it. It's got nothing to do with whose body's involved. It can be a girl's body, it can be his body, another man's body, his own body, a male body. Or you can be a female with a female body. A female could have the same thing. But whoever is fixated upon that IP is in the male universe. You get it? They're fixated upon the must be sexed, mustn't be sexed IP, they are a male. And if they're fixated upon the must sex, mustn't sex IP, they are a female. It fixes it. Now the IPs of the dissect girls package, the two IPs there, we call them the gender obsessive IPs. In a general girls package, we just call them the obsessive IPs. But because they fix gender, fix it thoroughly, nail it to the. I mean, you're nailing gender to the boards here. You are. You know. You're just fixing it absolutely rigidly. Of course, it fixes gender. We call those the gender obsessive IPs. So for the male, the must be sexed, mustn't sex IP is the male gender obsessive IP, and the must sex, mustn't sex IP is the female gender obsessive IP. Now, let us take some more examples of this, and we'll see how it works out. The various quite common quirks. And don't kid yourself on the subject of sex. If you've ever audited any number of preclears like I have, you'll realise how common sexual quirks are, and how bothersome they are to people, and how much time they spend worrying about them. One of the more worrisome sexual quirks that males suffer with is fear of homosexuality. Now this is a sort of common situation that occurs, say, to a young man, to an adult, or to an adolescent. He gets set upon by a pack of other adolescents or a pack of men and gets raped. And because this sexually excited him, he begins to believe that he's a homosexual. It's awfully common. It's awfully common. It can happen in childhood to young boys in childhood. It can happen at schools and so forth. Some lad gets picked upon and feminized by the other boys, and he gets the lad gets a sexual thrill out of it, gives him a sexual kick, and he thinks, oh my God, I'm a homosexual. Well now, let's examine this situation in terms of what we know. Let's take our adolescent boy that's is pack raped, and he gets a sexual thrill out of it. Well, the IP here is clearly the mustn't be sexed IP. That's the one that he was driven through. His body was driven into must be sexed. In the rape situation, so his body was driven through the must be sexed, mustn't be sexed IP, and driven into must be sexed. But while this was occurring, he got a sexual thrill from it. Well, he's in the male universe, isn't he? It's his gender obsessive IP. So naturally he would get sexually aroused by the presence of this gender obsessive IP, even though it's his own body. He would get aroused by it if it was happening to a female nearby him. It's his gender obsessive IP. You see that? He'll be sexually aroused. But the puzzle is that what worries him, he thinks, well, it didn't ought to happen on his own body. Well, why not? The rule is, as I said, it's the relationship between the game postulate and the obsessive IP. It's got nothing to do with the gender of the body. It's simply to do with the postulates. We're only concerned here with the postulates. It's got nothing to do with the body. It's just the goddamn postulates that are involved. You see that? Once you understand that, you've got it. So that this young man worrying about being a homosexual is completely false. There's nothing wrong with his sexuality. This incident where he was pack raped and he got sexually aroused by being pack raped doesn't mean he's a homosexual. It doesn't indicate any. There's no suggestion in the incident that he's anything else but a male. But he would have to understand this technology and work at the set goals package and so forth, and get to a point of understanding this technology before he could grasp this and breathe a sigh of relief and realise what's going on. All right, now what about another? There's another male who's got a sexual quirk. He gets sexually aroused. He likes to wear feminine clothes, and he gets sexually aroused when he arouses men, makes them sexually interested in him when he wears feminine clothes. Now, which universe is he in? Well, what's the IP here? He's actually by wearing feminine clothes, he's driving the other male over that way. He's depriving them of their mustn't sex postulate, isn't he? He's making them sexually interested, therefore he's driving them into must sex. So therefore he's in the feminine universe. It's a feminine sex game, that is. He's clearly this male is clearly out of gender. He's out of his masculine gender and he's in the feminine gender. You see that? So we fix this one, fix that one there. That's where he is. This cross clothing of children into clothes of the opposite gender and so forth by various parents is a fertile area for sexual quirks. Let's take an example. Take a woman, say, with a sexual quirk to dress her son as a girl. She dressed her son as a girl, and it gives her a sexual thrill. Now, which universe is she in? Now, I don't think there's a psychoanalyst, a psychotherapist on the planet that could solve that one. They would nearly always get it wrong. Well, let's examine the IP here. By dressing her son in feminine clothes, she is going to deprive him of his masculinity, right? She is, in effect, the sheer presence of all the ionization of all these feminine garments around the young lad's quite weak male sexuality would simply drive him into the female universe and would deprive him of his mustn't be sexed postulate and drive him into must be sexed. So the IP that is giving this person a thrill is the must be sexed, mustn't be sexed IP. She's driving her son through that IP into must be sexed. Now this is the male. This is what gives the male a sexual kick. So when she does this, she's in the male universe. Only a woman in the male universe will get a sexual thrill from dressing her son as a female. Now what about the woman who gets a sexual thrill from dressing her daughter as a boy? Well, the presence of all these masculine garments around the rather weak feminine sexuality of the female child would drive the child would deprive the child of their mustn't sex, the female child of her mustn't sex posture, and drive her into must sex. In other words, it would masculinize the young girl. But so what's the IP here? Well, the child will be driven through the mustn't sex, must sex IP into must sex. Well, that's the feminine gender obsessive IP. So the mother who would do this to her daughter is in the female universe. It will be a female sexual quirk. So you see that whatever the situation is, whatever the quirk is, the sexual quirk is, that by the use of this technology, this understanding of the IP, of the gender obsessive IP, and because we can tie up the gender obsessive IP with the gender, fixes which side of the package we're on, we can always, without exception, knowing the quirk, and knowing just the barest information about the quirk and so forth, and just the effect of the quirk has on the person, we can determine whether the person is in the male universe or the female universe. Quite interesting, isn't it? Quite interesting that we can do this and thereby resolve so many of these problems. Now any sex therapist would, they'd give anything for this technology. And they're very welcome to it. I hope it helps them. I really do. I hope it helps them. It's about time someone came along and solved humanity's problems on the subject of sex. You know, there's so much garbage written. There's whole libraries of garbage written in books on the subject of sex. It's about time someone come along and spoke the truth on the subject and settled everyone's mind so they knew exactly what the score is on this subject. So they can put their minds at rest. So a person with a sexual quirk, knowing this technology, they've only got to look at the IPs and so forth, and they'll know at a glance which universe they're in. They'll know sexually whether they're in the male universe, or they'll know whether they're in the feminine universe. It's as simple as that. So you see, this subject of sensation and the IP self and the postulate, it's got enormous ramifications, hasn't it? It doesn't sound very much when we start in on it, but we now find that it's of enormous social value in our society. Not just on the subject of sex. I mean, if it was only useful on the subject of sex, it would be wonderful data, wonderful information. But bear in mind, it applies to every goals package, as I've already indicated, with the examples of the young lads, adolescent boys driving their car into the brick wall, and the example of the to eat goals package. There's other examples there. So it applies to any goals package. Well, I hope this this information, this data on this subject has proven useful to you, and thank you very much.